The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. Our guest today in the studio, Carl Osentoski, Executive Director of the Huron County Economic Development Corporation in Bad Axe. He also handles another county as well.
Sanilac County.
Yep. His duties are growing, but they're similar in size and they're similar in agricultural basing and tourism along the shoreline. So there's a lot of similarities that help.
That it definitely does. And when we meet with folks from the state or federal government, it always adds some weight when we have two rural counties talking about projects. So, and we have a lot of similarities, our shoreline, our agriculture, manufacturing. So it works really, really well for us.
Okay. And what basically does the EDC do? It's kind of changed through the years. I imagine you're probably thinking you're going to go through changes now. Every time there's administration changes, their focus changes a little bit, and you get funds from a lot of these places, so you have to roll with punches.
We're adaptable.
Adaptable is
our approach. And you're right, because with every change in administration, both federal and state level, there's always a change of focus. When Governor Engler first started, he almost virtually eliminated economic development at the state level. And then over the course of several years, they discovered that you really probably should be in the business of economic development, telling businesses what the benefits are of locating in Michigan. So we're an adaptive organization. We kind of roll with the punches, whatever our communities need, and we do a couple things. One is we work at the community level, and we work with villages, cities in the two counties, and the focus is what the community needs and is interested in doing. In other places in the state, the county kind of is sitting at the top of the pyramid, and they'll dictate to local communities that we want to do this, but we won't do that. We kind of turn that whole equation around and sit down with the communities and say, what do you want to achieve? What are your goals, objectives? Do you want to do placemaking? Do you not want to do that? Do you want to focus on industrial development? And try to come up with some options related to that particular community.
That fits small town people, though, very well, because they don't want people coming in telling them what their community is going to be. They want to have the community they envision.
Exactly. I mean, and there's a rich local history in that community. There's a certain, and as we've worked in communities, every community has a different personality, which makes it fun and interesting for us. Sometimes challenging, but the idea is that it reflects the history of the community, the personalities of the community, and the individuals in the community. So we want to work really closely with those, with the elected leadership, with chambers of commerce, downtown development authorities, whatever it might be, to look at how those communities can improve over the course of time.
And you work with the communities to tell them, you know, that this is what you're looking for. This is what you kind of need if you want to get any kind of grant money, because it's a big project and you're going to need that to make any of this happen. So they may have to revise a little bit or contribute more than they thought because you need matching funds. These types of things that they don't necessarily think of at the beginning. They think there's grants out there for this.
Well, and it's going to get even more complicated. As we talked about, with every administration, it changes a little bit. The Michigan Economic Development Corporation, at the end of last year, rolled out a program called Redevelopment Ready Communities. And it's a multi-step process. And the goal is to update master plans, zoning ordinances, downtown development plans, all of those pieces, planning commissions, all economic development, website design. I mean, it's pretty all-inclusive. And the challenge for us is it's very complicated, it's very time-consuming, and a lot of our communities operate on a shoestring budget. They don't have a lot of paid staff, and it requires at least two full-day sessions, plus there's a inch-and-a-half checklist of things that they have to do at their end, update zoning ordinances. Is the zoning ordinance based on a master plan? I mean, kind of all of the mechanics. And if they're not engaged in the process formally, they have to pass a resolution, they have to attend the trainings. if they're not formally engaged in the process by October, those communities that aren't are not eligible for any state grants, incentives from MEDC.
Oh my gosh. Are they supplying any, you know, like kits or packets, you know, here, look this over, this is what you need to come, or do you just have to research it like you've done and go in there and tell them, you don't have this, 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 or this, and if you want to get that park finished in 3 years, you're going to need funding and you're going to need these ducks in order.
We've,
I mean, you try not to be that confrontational about it, but you have to let them know that it's
well,
not
going to fly. We've sent out material to every village, city in the two counties, to DDAs and chambers. So they should be aware that this is happening. And again, they have to make a decision that they want to engage in the process because it's a commitment of time and resources. I mean, not necessarily financial resources, although that could come into play because if you want to update your master plan, typically you'll hire a consulting mm-hmm. firm to help you do that because they're familiar with all of the updated requirements. Same with zoning, same with recreation plans, same with downtown development plans. So communities have done those by themselves, and we love those communities, but other communities don't have those kind of resources. So we're concerned about the smaller communities that we work with having the time and resources to do that. And, you know, a lot of the folks that are involved in the planning and zoning process are part-time people. They have full-time jobs, and as a contribution to their community, yeah. they'll go out and, you know, spend a couple hours working on zoning issues. But with this kind of ratchets up the requirements substantially. So we've been talking with the state. We'll continue to talk to the state about if there's a way that we can work on this. We offered to go through the training, the two-day training from our staff, and then we would take that back to the local communities and kind of train the trainer kind of thing where we could dedicate that staff time and then work with individual communities on that. State said no.
Really? They didn't like pay it forward?
They didn't. They said if the community's going to be participating, they have to show up.
Well, but that is another part of the equation when people are handing out money. They want to know there's a commitment here. It didn't just come because, you know, his bar looks kind of bad. We should get a grant to give it a face, you know, that mm-hmm. type of thing. Give it a yep. facelift. They want to make sure there's plans. You've got an idea of what you want to do in the community. You've kind of got it, you know, this, and this in order.
Right.
This is what needs to be done. We need the infrastructure first. Then we need the pretty up the sidewalks and the, you know, so you don't have to tear them all up
right.
once the other stuff
right.
goes bad. So it's all got to be planned ahead so they feel they're getting the best bang for their buck.
Absolutely. I mean, the intent of their effort is laudable. The challenge is
we're not big cities.
We're not big. We don't have
a full-time planning commissioner and a full-time staff for them and a full-time zoning office and all that stuff
exactly.
that takes care of these things.
We've talked to larger communities. We were at meetings with some folks who serve on city councils, and they said, you know, we have 50,000 people in our community, and we find this as a challenge. We're in our third year of this, and we're still challenged by it. So,
did you look at them and say, we have 30,000 in the whole county?
Well, I did, and they're familiar with it. So you know, they and their sentiment was, we're not sure how that's going to impact. So we're trying to get the state to look at rural communities, maybe a size difference, a little differently than a Detroit or a Flint or Saginaw Bay City kind of thing. So we're trying to engage in some of those discussions now.
And sometimes in the smaller cities, it has a bigger impact. You have a yep. huge city and you fix up one street front in a whole big city, where in our area, that's your main street usually, and that's what everybody sees going through town.
Exactly. So the concept is great. We're not bad-mouthing the concept. And we're encouraging communities to engage in the process. If they can, we lobbied heavily to the state, and they finally brought the two-day training sessions up into Lapeer, where before the nearest place that we could send people was Lansing. I talked to a community yesterday that was planning on going to Muskegon for the training. So we were able to get it local, which they initially didn't want to do. And it took 3 months, 6 months to get them to do that. But We got them to commit to doing a two-day training session in Lapeer at the end of March and mid-April, I think, are the dates. So we're working on that. We've got sample resolutions for the communities if they want to pass the resolution. We've got several samples that they can pass. And then we've got checklists. We've got websites with the checklist on them so that they can kind of start working through some of those and understanding what the process is. So the material's there. We've encouraged them to go through the training and then, you know, decide how they want to do that. But the state's requirement is that they have to have a commitment by October.
And a lot of local communities have some of this in place because a lot of them have learned if you want a DNR grant, you got to have either a master plan or a recreation plan if you're doing something recreational, because they want to see it's in the plan before they'll give you anything.
Absolutely. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, to focus, you know, but you get into some different planning concepts. Is it form-based zoning versus traditional zoning versus other kinds of zoning? Do you have parking requirements? Traditional zoning, you have parking requirements. The new zoning requirements just adopted by the city of Buffalo in New York, there are no parking requirements. They just eliminated them. So there's different planning techniques that work in some communities, might not work in other communities. So it's kind of working through all of those things. Does the community have a permitting process? Well, most of the time you stop in and see the clerk. I mean, that's the first step in the process. But the state wants all of that formalized on a website that the city or village would maintain. So,
but this sounds like, you know, they wouldn't let you do the training, but it sounds like they should get people who want to do this as like almost a little business, train them, and they can help cities around the state. That way, you know, you're getting somebody who has the knowledge, and, you know, you're paying them, they better do their job,
well,
type of thing.
And that's the challenge is...
Because, a lot of these small communities... The people who have run for office are part-timers. They don't have the time to commit to a great big project like this can become.
There's a lot of technical issues that go along with master planning and zoning. And that's part of our concern, because a lot of our communities don't have the financial resources that other larger communities have. So in order to pay a consultant, and there are consultants out there that can do this.
Oh, there are. Okay.
Absolutely. The state. We're working on a project in Sandusky, Project Rising Tide. It's a governor's designation. A company out of Ann Arbor, Beckett and Rader, are actually providing technical assistance to the city of Sandusky because they don't have the time and resources to do that themselves. So the state has engineered a technical assistance grant for Sandusky to help them do that. My concern is that a lot of communities don't have the resources to pay $20,000 or $30,000 to do a master plan and zoning update. Falls back on the local community to do that themselves.
Who might rather see, you know, a few feet of new sidewalk where it's all rusted
right
up from years of, you know, just being there.
Right. So it's a complicated process. We're encouraging communities to engage in the process if they can, and we'll continue dialogue with the state to see if we can get some accommodations for our smaller communities, because frankly they don't have the time resources or the money resources in order to do some of these things. So, but it was appropriate because it's one of those programs that with the next administration, this may all disappear. So we have to adapt to how we approach communities, what resources we're able to provide. We're informing communities about the new state programs. And so we're kind of roll through that. The other part of what the EDC does, because if we started this conversation on what the EDC does, we also provide support for businesses, both small businesses, large businesses. And part of our job is to connect resources to those businesses. I don't have the technical expertise to write a business plan, but I know people who do. And so our job is to meet with the business, kind of understand what they're doing, if they're expanding, how are they expanding, are they adding jobs, are they investing in a new building, those kinds of things. And then we can sit down and say, okay, you know, if you're investing in a new building, we can do this, this, and this. If you're hiring new people, we put them in contact with Michigan Works. If they need a business plan, the Small Business Development Center out of Kettering University has actually staff up in the Thumb area that can help them put together a business plan and work. So our job is to be aware of what those resources are, both at the state and federal level and at the local level, and kind of connect the dots for these folks, because it gets complicated really fast sometimes.
And a lot in the past has been trying to bring business up here, where now it seems more like it's better to take the business we have up here and develop them further and create more jobs that way.
80% of the business growth is driven by local businesses, and we see that on a regular basis throughout the both counties. Local businesses that have been established here continue to expand, sometimes significantly.
They also know the community's, you know, buttons and don't push them. Like somebody coming in from the outside will say, well, this is what we did down there, and this is, you know.
Exactly.
Because down there you may have that big fancy, you know, pipe that just takes all your waste away. Here, our little towns have to learn to deal with some of this stuff.
Exactly. So what our job is to do a little of both. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot, I should say. We do a lot and then a little. We do a lot with local companies. I mean, if they're looking at expansions, and we want to sit down with them and kind of work through that process.
They already know what the area has to mm-hmm. offer. They know that there are good people up here, many of whom want to work.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps all their interests centralized, so they're not having to run to the other side of the state right. for one little factory out there.
Right. And at the other end, we try to, if a community has an industrial park or industrial space that has capacity, we want to sit down with them and say, what kind of businesses would you like to see there? But the
light manufacturing is a lot easier on the infrastructure of a town than something using chemicals.
Correct.
Those types of
right.
things. Because, you know, Harbor Beach has Dow and they have mm-hmm. all that down there, but, you know, they know that going in, and the expansions can be done on the sewer system to handle it.
Right.
But a lot of times companies are asked to help in that price because
correct.
The rest of the citizens shouldn't be having to pay for somebody else's waste.
So, and
it gets complicated.
It does.
Get stuck in the middle because the company wanting to come in says, I want you to get me this stuff. This
exactly.
will bring me in. And the people locally say they should be paying for this.
Correct. Yes, we're often stuck in the middle. But that's part of our job, is to understand kind of the needs and of both sides and try to sit down and work through some of those issues. Sewer, water, roads, electrical, natural gas. I mean, all of those pieces. Becoming more critical are telecommunications. Do you have fiber optic? Do you have high-speed internet? What does that look like? Where is it? Is it redundant? So if a line gets cut, I can still do my business. Those are the kinds of things that become more and more critical. And kind of the other part of this is that the competition for these business expansions, especially for outside of the area, is phenomenal. There are something like 3,000 economic development organizations around the country doing and a lot with a lot more resources than we have. Are out there, you know, they'll do foreign trade trips with the governor. They'll go to Europe or Mexico or China trying to recruit businesses to the state and ultimately to a local community someplace. So, you know, we're out there competing with the Grand Rapids, with the Detroits, with the Chicagos, with Singapore, with, you know, Frankfurt. We're all competing for those same dollars. That's why we like to put our money on the local companies. How do we grow local businesses? Because if we can get 10 local businesses with 10 employees each, if one of them closes, it's not like a company with 100 that closes. I mean, the impact is a lot different. So that's why we're focusing on trying to grow local businesses for local communities. And if there's ways that we can help them export or sell on the internet, that's part of our job as well.
And a lot of these bigger communities just basically can outbid you. I mean, you know, where the community here will say, you're going to have to help with the upgrades to the sewer infrastructure to handle your waste. Others might say, you know, it's spread out over 100,000 people in the community. You know, well, it's not as big of a deal as when it's spread out over 300.
Oh, exactly. Well, and you look at even communities in our region. We do projects with the city of Flint. Their population has significantly declined, which means they have even more sewer capacity. Their infrastructure is set up for a lot larger community and population than they have. So if you need sewer, water, electrical, natural gas, I mean, Flint has it. Flint has other issues.
That infrastructure is old. That is another thing that people have to consider is, you know, it's working today.
Right. Exactly. So that's where we get challenged is, you know, we've got communities that have invested in infrastructure, but the scale of the business is important. Is it, you know, 1,000 people or is it 200 people? You know, is it, you know, a chemical manufacturer or is it a light plastics manufacturer that does injection molding? So it has a different footprint and different requirements. And so our job is to work with those businesses, try to identify some of the roadblocks and remove the roadblocks so they can continue to do business.
And I imagine a lot of the new ones you try to get, you kind of judge a lot by the business itself, how they act in the communities they're in now. Are they a part of the community or are they just standing alone doing what they do? And, you know, around here the businesses tend to get more involved in the communities. They're part of it.
Oh, exactly. I mean, and they look at, you know, if they need employees, they know that they have to invest locally to kind of get those employees from the local communities. They're invested in the schools and the tech center and all of those kind of places because they know that that's where they're recruiting from. So it is important that we gauge the community involvement from the folks that we're recruiting. And again, it's very, very difficult to recruit new businesses. Not impossible, but very difficult.
And well, we run into that. We're at the tip of a peninsula. There's not a throughway to their next factory where they can do step from the process to here and go to three further north. They have to want to come here.
Exactly. And we're engaged with the Port Austin and Bad Axe Water Authority, for instance, because they've identified an issue that they have excess capacity in that system. So one of the metrics that we're using right now is what kinds of businesses and industries use a lot of water. So, which is a chance. I mean, you just can't go to the local directory and say, okay, big water users. So it takes some research on our part to try to identify industry segments.
That won't require a lot of waste handling at the end.
Correct.
That is going to use a lot of that water and not just pump it back out and has to be cleaned and reprocessed before it hits our lake. So there's a big formula in this that you got to look at before you say this will work locally in a small county like this.
Correct. You know, what are the wastewater treatment? You know, do they use a lot of water and then just ship it out? And it gets even more complicated because there's something called the Great Lakes Compact, which is an international agreement which limits the amount of water that can leave the watershed, the Great Lakes watershed.
So if they're shipping it locally in some sort of product, it's okay, but if it goes outside the basin, you may need a waiver or some type of thing from the compact.
Exactly. It gets a little more complicated, so we want to be sensitive to those kinds of issues. So And that's what makes my job interesting, is because not only are we working with wastewater treatment and water and all of those things, and siting issues. You know, where do you site a business that uses a lot of water? What kind, you know, are there two people?
Is the industrial park the place to be? Do they need to be right on the water? You know, all of these types of things come into play, and the water frontage around here is scarce.
Exactly. So, you know, we're working with the communities right now on trying to identify some industries that we feel would fit appropriately, but that would use some of that water resource. So we're kind of doing a deep dive into that right now.
No pun intended.
never. But we've made some contacts with the Michigan Economic Development. They have some research staff available. So we try to identify an industry segment. And they'll do some research on what businesses are involved in that. For instance, one of the initial discussions, I know it's been in the press, is can we get a water bottling plant? So part of our job is to say, okay, maybe, but you know, who operates in that? You know, Nestle does it, and there's several other
Coke,
Pepsi. I mean, all of those businesses that are in the beverage industry. And so we started looking at that, and then we said, can we look at other beverages? You know, because the main content is water. Can we do soda bottling up here? Can we do beer bottling up here? Or can we have a brewery up here? But then it gets into that whole waste stream is that there, when you start looking at breweries and distilleries,
you've
the waste stream
the hops
is...
and all the other stuff that are old, left over, and used in the brewing process have to be disposed of somewhere. And our landfill might have a bunch of happy rats, but that's about it.
Well, actually, I think you can some of the material you can actually feed to cattle and cows.
Oh, and, so, and it might be like where they could grind it into the soil as fertilizer too.
Correct. So there's different ways of handling it, but you still have some liquid waste stream coming out of that. And then the challenge is, you know, we try to balance this out and say, okay, would a Michigan brewer be interested in something like that? And the answer is probably not, because if you're a Founders or a Bell's or an Atwater, kind of in that mid, they're not huge brewers, but they're kind of that mid-size to small brewers, they're already in the market. They don't have to move. They're already in Grand Rapids or Detroit or Kalamazoo. So our goal is to say, let's not look anywhere in the Midwest because they're already in the market. Let's look at either coast, because they're typically not in the market. So part of the research that we've asked Michigan Economic Development to do for us is to look at water bottling operations and brewers, distillers on either the East or West Coast.
Kind of want to distribute their product, though, in the Great Lakes Basin, so we don't run into those other problems with having to get permission to extract too much water.
And if you're shipping mostly water. So if you can brew it and package it here and you're shipping it in the Midwest, it's a lot better than paying, you know, all the variable cost with fuel cost and shipping cost and all of those things, all of everything that goes into logistics. So we're trying to balance all of that stuff out. Mm-hmm. And when people say, you know, it's just, you know, you just go out and recruit companies, well, it gets more and more complicated as we kind of do a dive down into these things. So
but you have to make sure the company is going to profit from mm-hmm. this, and the local area is going to see benefits from it. It's not one or the other. It's got to be a match made in heaven almost.
And what we also are sensitive to is that the companies that we're talking to, or eventually we'll talk to, is that they have a commitment to the area. My biggest fear is that we attract a company in, and 3 years later they're moved out or they're bankrupt. Or, you know, we want somebody that has some sticking power that will be here and provide jobs to our local communities, for our local residents. So we don't want,
you want is a mess to clean up when they're gone.
Exactly. So we don't want empty buildings there. We want buildings that are filled with employees and are producing products. So that's where, you know, we want to look at the stability of the companies, their commitment to the local community. You know, why are they interested in the Midwest? Do they have a presence here? You know, until just in the last 2 weeks, California has had a water issue.
Yeah, now they don't.
Now they don't. They've got lots of other issues. And I feel bad for them. But over the past 2 years or 3 years, they've had a drought, a serious drought in California, actually the entire western part of the country. Is can we work with those companies to see if there's an opportunity to move them here? Because we do have a stable water source. And upwards of 500 million gallons annually of treated water coming out of the regional water system. So it's, and you know, then we start drilling down to, you know, is it a better match in Port Austin, somewhere in between, or in Bad Axe, and kind of look at all of those metrics.
And these firms have to, if they're interested, come up and test our water to
Correct.
See if it's going to keep their product stable through all the brands across the nation. When you get one in Michigan, you want it to taste the same when you're in California.
Correct.
And one in New York. And maybe they have to do a little bit to further filter just to meet the standards they do for bottling, pop, or brewing.
Right. And this is treated water versus the KWA system that they're building from the shore over into Flint is raw water. So that's it has to be treated at in Emily City or Lapeer or Flint.
I've always worried with that pipe that sometime down the road they're going to find, you know, zebra mussels in it clogging the pipe, and it's raw water.
They're not
even filtering at the beginning to keep those things out. I mean, they're rather tiny, I guess, when they're hatched.
They're almost microscopic. So
they get through there. They're going to be there as long as there's nutrients flying right by. They're going to be happy.
Right. So part of our challenge in working with the group, and it's not a challenge, the information is there, is we want to get from the water system what the chemistry of the water is so that we can tell a brewer or a water bottler that this is typically what the water looks like. I mean, we're drawing it from the lake, so there's always variability from that water
side. It's very soft to begin with. There's not a lot of minerals because you're not pumping it out of a well way down in the earth. And it's cleaned and filtered and sterilized, and away you go.
Right. So that's what we want to make sure that that's part of the package, that as we start ramping up the work and we start doing some of the research, we start saying, you know, these are the companies that are thinking of expanding or are in expansion mode or might be good targets for us to attract. That's when we start drilling down and saying, okay, this is what the water chemistry looks like. This is what the sewer systems can handle, and start kind of triangulating down to where we've got maybe five companies that fit the criteria that we're looking for, and we can start making some serious contacts, either with our state partners or just ourselves directly with the communities.
And another factor would be, you know, the plant is basically new processing the water. It's only a couple of years old. The pipes going out are new issue. You don't have to worry about infrastructure. We've had a good history of not having contamination problems and boil water advisories every other week.
Exactly.
You know, these are things they have to worry about because, you know, they have to make sure nothing gets in that plant
reliability issue. It's similar to electrical. You don't want electrical systems that just quit working.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the kinds of things that business and industry look at.
And we have the big power line coming through here. So we've got a more stable system than we had years ago.
Absolutely. And that's one of the big criteria. And whether you like it or not, a lot of businesses look for renewable or green energy.
Just had to go there.
whether you agree or not, but it's a selling point for us. I mean, we have renewable energy available. I mean, there's a lot of other issues associated with those. I understand that, but they're here. I look at them every day. And so it's something that we can use as another selling point when we're talking with business and industry coming into the area.
Google get credits for saying their power is from renewable energy, you know, in their advertising and such, because, you know, people think, you know, this stuff just goes into a line and shipped out of here. A lot of that's used here, too. It all goes into the infrastructure.
It goes into the infrastructure. Electrons look the same when they're in a power line.
You never met the electrons live scene.
I don't want to know. But those are selling points that we can have, you know.
When other people buy the energy, they're getting credits.
Correct.
For what we produce around here and we just put into the pipeline.
And there's lots of companies that look for renewables. Google, Apple, automotive.
We're going to get an Apple up here.
But a lot of companies tout their sustainability greenness. And greenness and those kind of things. So, you know, as we're developing the sales pitch, that's a part of it. It's probably not going to be the critical part, but it's just one of those things that we're going to be looking for, especially as we move and target East and West Coast companies. We have a very Midwestern approach, but on either coast, it's a very different approach. So we want to make sure that we're sensitive to that. The big selling point for us is that we have an available water source and a substantial water source.
And when the company comes up here, the people they're sending up here are going to be living in a nice lakefront community, beautiful year-round activities, summertime boating, wintertime snowmobiling, fishing year-round. I mean,
for a fraction of the cost of living in California.
Seattle or someplace like
that.
Or
Massachusetts, or, you know. So it's those kinds of things that we work on. And again, that's a clear demonstration of community involvement, because the communities ask us to get involved in that, and business involvement. We're doing business attraction and hopefully retention. So we're trying to understand all of the dynamics and kind of work our way through that. But that's part of what our office does.
That only took us a half an hour.
Done.
You wanted to talk about making spaces or maker spaces?
Maker spaces.
It sounds like something you'd trap a Pokemon with or something.
You could, but probably not. No, we're working with the city of Harbor Beach on a project right now, which is has received funding from the Economic Development Administration, which is part of the U.S. Department of Commerce. So it's federal dollars. And the federal dollars were available to help communities that were negatively impacted by coal issues. There's been a diminishing of the coal industry. Coal mining has communities down south have been impacted by coal mining closures and those kind of things. We were surprised when we were asked to attend a meeting. Ron Rubel and myself, Ron is the city administrator over in Harbor Beach, to attend a meeting. And we went down, and Harbor Beach was one of the communities that was discussed because we had the closing of the DTE power plant over there,
which was coal, and they basically didn't upgrade to meet the new standards for clean coal energy. And
correct.
So they closed it and relied more on the energy they're getting from the, let's say, turbines.
Well, exactly.
I mean, their focus changed in our area, and that plant is being decommissioned.
And with the ITC power line, the thumb loop, that provided stable power. It's a dual feed system, so it can feed electricity from either end of it. That reduced substantially the need for the Detroit Edison power plant, which was a peaking plant and used for upper thumb stability of the grid up here.
So when it got to be 95 and everyone turned down their air conditioners, the plants around here, they didn't have to scale back their furnaces or whatever because we wanted to keep cool.
Correct. So we have the ITC. So we've been working with Harbor Beach on the approach. The weird thing with the federal dollars is that we couldn't directly plan that site. We can look all around it. We can look throughout the community, and that's what we're doing. But we can't, because it's in private ownership, we can't directly look at that site. So in talking with the folks at the federal level,
we want it to stay in private ownership because we don't need it as a county property and maybe find something on there you got to clean up or whatever. You want it to be in a private hands and redeveloped.
We want it redeveloped. We want jobs associated with it, if at all possible, and that will come. I mean, we're engaged in that process as well.
You don't have a lot of waterfront on in the harbor of Harbor Beach.
Correct.
That big.
Right.
I mean, it would afford itself to hotels, to anything.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's kind of a gem.
It's got a deep water port.
If you want to develop something there, I mean, you're not going to find a chunk that big.
Correct. I mean, and essentially, our understanding is they're removing fly ash, which they held on site. So that process is still going on. But what we wanted to do is to look at how we can build a local economy in Harbor Beach away from that site. So the federal government gave us some dollars. DTE actually matched the grant that we received from the feds. So we've engaged a planning firm from Detroit called M1DTW. They're a small firm. And we wanted somebody to kind of look at out-of-the-box kind of solutions instead of just saying, you know, we've got an industrial park, we're going to recruit. We wanted to look at what available resources we have, and one of the ideas that we struck on and the federal government liked was the development of maker spaces. And people are out there scratching their heads saying, what's a maker space? Well, a maker space is kind of, I use as an example our kitchen incubator. There's a lot of equipment there that if I'm thinking of doing jams and jellies, I don't have to go out and buy a commercial kitchen. I can rent one relatively inexpensively at our Votec Center, and we can develop a business around that. Makerspaces basically do the same kind of thing, but they do it with woodworking equipment. It might be circuits. It might be computer programming. It might be 3D printing. It might be all of those. So what the company is doing is they're engaged, they're meeting community leaders, business leaders in the Harbor Beach area, trying to understand the community. And they'll be looking at what kind of resources we might be able to kind of toss into the mix. Can the libraries play roles in makerspaces in other communities? Would the library be interested and have the ability? School systems actually have makerspaces as a way to encourage science and technology training and learning at local school districts. So
the ISD.
The ISD.
Do that here with your incubator for food.
Exactly. So we're looking at, and the firm, M1, is looking at all of those resources in the community. And our approach, my approach, has been not just looking at an individual building that will put in a 3D printer. Our approach is, can we do kind of a maker district where we could have a woodworking shop someplace, and we can have computer programming and circuitry design and construction at another location that makes sense for the community. Maybe it's associated with the school or the library, or maybe even as a standalone building. We don't know yet.
But it'd be like where the resources are.
Right.
If they're already in place somewhere and available during certain times, like your incubator.
Exactly.
It just lends itself to being further utilized.
And the goal is that we encourage local business growth. That's the end. It can be small businesses. It might just be a woodworking operation, maybe a furniture maker or something like that, that could be done locally. And we've talked to folks from around the country that you can actually convert retail spaces, empty retail spaces, into these kinds of maker spaces, that you could have a small retail operation that you could sell to tourists during the summer and have a wood shop or a 3D printing shop in the back.
Like wineries sometimes have the
tasting room up
in front and the actual winemaking equipment in the back.
Exactly. And we're excited because if you can take retail spaces and convert those, we can use the same pattern for other communities. So we're starting in Harbor Beach. We're understanding kind of the whole maker environment. But then we can take and look at individual spaces that are available in Harbor Beach, empty buildings that might be underutilized, and we can do the same in Seaboyne or in Croswell. So we can kind of move the pattern around, and it can be adapted to a local community because every community's resources look different.
And you don't have to duplicate. Maybe people in Croswell come up to Harbor Beach and people in Harbor Beach go to Croswell if they have the specific things you need, as opposed to duplicating services.
Exactly. And one of the interesting pieces to this is that as people are making things in makerspaces, they could be selling them online. And it kind of goes back to our infrastructure with our fiber and broadband. It all kind of builds on each other. So we're excited about the project. It's just in its infancy stages. We're just starting out now. But the idea is that we can build local companies. We don't have to go out and recruit. And we have stable people. We have very imaginative people that have a good work ethic, and they could be starting their own businesses in Harbor Beach or in Seaboyne. But Harbor Beach is our prototype and model.
Because they had the coal.
Because
you got the grant.
Right.
But that gives you the groundwork as to how this goes, and you can adapt it for the cities.
Exactly.
We're pretty much out of time, Carl.
What?
It just really went fast. How do people get a hold of the EDC if they have questions or if they need help on something, a business looking for whatever kind of help you can give them?
The best way is to give us a call. Our phone number is 269-6431.
Regular business hours, county open hours.
Right, because we're in and out of the building frequently, so it's best to call. You can email me. My email is Carl, C-A-R-L, at HuronCounty.com. So either way, because if you just show up at our door, it could be like right now,
you
the door is
there.
Locked.
You would not be there.
I would not be there. So it's best to email or call so that we can set up a time, or I can go out and meet with the company. We've done that on a regular basis. So
or the community or whatever.
Exactly. We just did a downtown development meeting in Port Sanilac, met with some companies down in Croswell. So, I mean, we're all over the place. So it's best to just email or call, and we can set up a time.
Thanks for being with us today.
It's always fun, Craig.
And again, Carl Asentowski, EDC Director, Huron County and Sanilac County. And again, if you have a need for grants, if you need to help with business, he's there waiting to help. He has a lot of things on his plate, but he will make room for you.
Absolutely.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.
I'm Ashton Jackson. Listen to WLEW.